This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of This Season in Travel. This is our summer edition. You probably last saw us from our spring edition of the show. With us, again, as usual, is the man so nice they named him twice, Mr. Chris Christensen. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thanks.
And since we last got the gang together, where have you been?
I have been to the PRSA Travel and Tourism Conference in Lexington, Kentucky, to Boston, and to D.C.
Oh, yeah, that happened. I totally forgot about it. Also with us with a fresh new haircut, and I'm sorry if you're listening to this on iTunes that you can't appreciate it, Miss Jen Leo. How are you doing, Jen?
I'm doing great. Nice to see you guys.
Same, yeah. It's been far too long. When people start complaining that there hasn't been a show, it's time to do a show.
Hey, Gary, aren't you going to ask me where I've been? Because I actually went somewhere.
I wasn't, but you can tell us.
I've been to Rome, Tuscany, and London, just back.
And was this just a vacation?
It was. It was a vacation with the Leo side of the family, and we stayed at the Monte Chiaro Winery Estate in just outside of Siena.
You know, I never asked you this, but is the Leo side of your family your side or the husband's side? I don't know if Leo is your name or you took your husband's name.
Oh, it's my side. Husband's name is Caldwell.
I didn't know. I never bothered to ask.
That's all right.
And we got a first-time guest on the show today. He's an entrepreneur, a speaker, a traveler. Please welcome to the first time, Mr. Scott Eddy. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me, guys.
And you're coming to us also from California.
Yeah, in sunny Long Beach.
This happens far too often where I am the only non-Californian on the show. And once again, I would love to have a show where we have another person from Wisconsin at some point. And I don't know who that would be, but I think it could be done. Let's talk about a couple of news stories. There's been a lot of news, actually, since the last time we did a show, but we'll just pick a couple. This was interesting. There were protests in France among taxi drivers who were protesting Uber, some of them saying that they've lost as much as 40% of their business. France kind of has a history of people in various professions, most notably farmers, bitching about the fact that they're not getting some deal or whatever from the government. Do you think they have a legitimate claim, or is just this kind of the French being French?
Well, first of all, when you say protest, let's put this in a little context here. They were beating up cars. They were beating up some people. They were blocking all the roads to the airport. They were setting tires on fire. So it was a good sized protest that had the government immediately calling for stricter controls on Uber. So it was also a very successful protest from that point of view. So do they have a legitimate beef? Well, in the same way that the buggy whip manufacturers could protest that things are moved away from buggy whips, absolutely. I mean, it's creative destruction. I mean, all of the new economy things are definitely affecting the old economy. And so if you're a taxi driver, Uber is competition. Now, should you protect old industries? I don't think so. That's not the way things work here, but things work a little different in France.
Well, it's that way in Las Vegas. Can't use Uber in Vegas right now still. Big taxi still kind of has a monopoly.
Drivers are fighting it everywhere and doing what they can.
I'm surprised. You know, I've never been in an Uber car, but I am really surprised, like, pulling into the San Francisco airport, how many people are being picked up in Uber and how many people I know who are kind of my kids' age, especially, you know, sort of early 20s and such, just, you know, they Uber everywhere.
You've never used Uber?
No, but I don't get in cabs that much either.
Oh. Scott, do you use? Have you used Uber?
I'm probably their super user. I use it in almost every country that I go to, and I absolutely love the service. I can't remember the last time I used a taxi. And you know, the thing that I see happening is you have these laws in this industry that have been using the same laws and the same rules for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and they haven't adapted with time. And they need to, because it's a new industry, it's a new era, it's a new sharing economy, and they really need to get with the program. And you know, the French, they just didn't know how to deal with it, started flipping over cars. They feel that the best way to deal with it was to ruin their own country until their government says, okay, we don't want you to ruin the country anymore, so we're going to put down we're going to change the laws, or at least put a temporary clamp down, which doesn't make sense. That's
and
not
who
a...
Was the, and I'm drawing a blank here, but who was the pop star who was caught in a car on the way to the airport and was tweeting the whole thing live?
Courtney Love.
Courtney yeah. Love.
Yeah. I wouldn't call her a pop star, but
sorry. Well, I had my ears off there a little bit. But
now, I have been told that one of our group is actually taking the other role in the sharing economy. Jen, I didn't know this. You've been driving for Lyft, an Uber competitor.
I have. I recently started with Lyft. And after taking some great rides from them, I was looking for some RV breakdown money. I need to have some money that's a stash. And I just didn't want to be behind my computer anymore. I love talking to people. And what I liked about Lyft was that there's no commitment. You just flip it on when you want to drive, and you don't have to answer to anybody. You don't have to ask for vacation time. There's no commitment. So between that and getting out of the house, it really spoke to me. Now, that said, I'm not really making that much money, and I haven't figured out the best places to be or times to go, because I'm not that interested in driving to the drunk crowd on a Friday and Saturday night after midnight. So I'm trying to figure out how I can do it and fit it into the schedule. But so far I love it, and I'm really having great conversations with people, at least one good conversation.
Well, so how many? I haven't been competing with Uber, but my car has. Because you remember a couple shows back, or maybe it was only last show, but it's been so long, I mentioned that I had signed up with Flight Car. And so, yeah. For instance, my last trip was 15 days. I parked the car not at the long-term parking where you have to pay $100 a week, but at Flight Car where they wash your car and, you know, loan it out while you're gone. And they did actually loan it out this time. You don't really make any money on that. I mean, you make, I think it's a nickel a mile, basically, for the time that they have it. But on the other hand, you're not paying for long-term parking. So,
right, which if you're gone for 2 weeks and you wouldn't have taken a ride from somebody else, that's a good amount of money, a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, I think they estimated that I saved $300 or something like that.
Scott, there's a lot of other things other than just Uber. There's Airbnb, for, you know, there's lodging, and I don't know. I see these things spring up all the time, some of which I think are of questionable value. Is there anything else you use other than Uber?
For me, I haven't really jumped all over the sharing economy except for Uber. I haven't even set up a Airbnb account for no reason than just lack of doing it. Not that I don't like it. I have a lot of friends who use it. I actually have a friend in Bangkok who bought 6 apartments strictly for an investment with Airbnb. He literally bought them to put them on Airbnb, and he kills it.
I've heard of people doing that.
Laws, like in Santa Monica, a law against Airbnb if you are not in the place, because they're saying it's taking apartments actually out of the economy. You know, and whether the government should step in or not, they are doing so in Santa Monica. And of course, up here, we mentioned before that we've become an Airbnb host. In fact, I think in May and June, our mortgage was paid by Airbnb. And it'll be mostly paid here for the next 3 months because we've been booked almost solid.
Chris, that's so great. Gary, you probably didn't know this about me, but I am also an heiress.
I believe it. I don't doubt it.
Well, not in Carlsbad, but we got a house in Charleston, and we've been Airbnb-ing that it's a two property. It's a three-bedroom house and a one-bedroom cottage on the same property, and we've been doing great at it.
So how do you do the upkeep?
Also, but she's also become a rodeo clown in her spare time just to try and earn money. So it's got just so many different hats.
Rodeo clown.
So how do you maintain the place in Charleston when you're not there?
So we have a friend that's a property manager, and she has a cleaning service. And so she is the on-the-ground person that handles, talking to the guests and meeting with the guests and stuff like that as needed. She also got the place furnished and did all that. And then John, on the back end, he's kind of like the web guy, and he does the sort of the behind the scenes. It's partially done by the property manager, and then he oversees to make sure there's no gaps. Because when you do it on HomeAway and Airbnb, you have to sync it yourself. Yeah.
Jen, do you ever remember the show In Living Color? I think it was on like the late 80s, early 90s.
Vaguely.
There was this skit they always did of a Jamaican family that like everybody had like three jobs. Like, yeah, man, I got three jobs. Got to go to my second job. I think that's like.
Is that me?
Yes.
Are you going to start talking to me in a Jamaican accent every time you see me now?
I think if they did the show back today, the skit would be that. People like sharing everything they own to try to make money off of it.
Okay. Well, I don't want to put this out here, but I'm in the process of outlining a book on the sharing economy, actually.
Oh, very cool.
I think that might do quite well. Let's move on to our next story. There's been a rash of these happening in the last couple months. Tourists taking off their clothes in front of iconic places, primarily in Asia, and getting in trouble for it. So a couple months ago, there was one of some women showing their buttocks in Angkor Wat, another one taking off their shirt, and the most recent case on top of Mount Kinabalu in Malaysia, some tourists took off their clothes, took their picture, posted it on social media, ha, we're naked, but the Malaysians, I guess, did not think it was all that funny. And one of the people who did it, a British woman, 24 years old, Eleanor Hawkins, may end up going to jail for 3 months. What do you think about this? Is it, tough crap, you shouldn't act like this when you're in a foreign country, or do you think that the Malaysians are being a bit harsh?
I take the former. I think that they should know better, and I think it's terribly insensitive to the culture of the country. I just think it's wrong, 100%. I mean, living in Asia for 11 years full time, I just think that, do your research, use your head. You wouldn't do, people when they go on holiday, when they go on vacations, they tend to do things that they would never do at home just because they think they can just go out and be wild and be free. And I think it's wrong. It's the wrong mentality to have.
I think there's an attitude, especially if you go to a lot of the backpacker destinations in Southeast Asia, you get these young kids, and they're going to the full moon parties, and it's all just drinking and sex, and that's kind of why they go. They're not there to experience the culture. They're right. There to be away from home and to let loose. And so I'm really not shocked that this kind of stuff happens, and I think they forget that they're still subject to the laws of a different country.
Yeah.
Jen, back in the days when you had sand in your bra.
Very good callback there.
Did you ever engage in such activities?
I don't think I ever nuded up at a monument or anything like that. I'm pretty confident I did it. But I did,
Jen,
do my
I'm not sure that everybody knows what Gary was talking about when he was talking about you having sand in your bra here.
Oh,
I think
yes.
Perhaps you ought to explain that first.
Oh, yeah. Scott probably doesn't even know what that is. No. So way back in the day, I edited a series of women's travel misadventure books for Traveler's Tales. And the first one was called Sand in My Bra. The second was Whose Panties Are These?
Wow.
The third one was The Thong Also Rises.
Okay.
The fourth one that Chris might have read and reviewed on his site was What Color Is My Jock Strap? And then the fifth one...
White?
Well, because a bunch of my guy friends wanted in on the craze. I mean, the Sand in My Bra series did really well, and I was touring and doing book events for them every year.
This is for Traveler's Tales.
Yeah, it was just like travel stories gone wrong by women, true stories, some of them funny, some of them just out there.
It looks like you have a candidate for the next book when you want to do another one. So.
What was that, Chris?
The person who's going to be locked up in Malaysia here. So
yeah, she might have time to write the book.
Eleanor Hawkins, it's true. She loves
fans. So looking at the picture on the Telegraph, there are some men covering up their privates. But so the women have sports bras and leggings on. Now,
at that point, I mean, I think they all actually got naked. I think that photo that they're showing was like not... There were other photos.
Okay.
Yeah, and yes. There were other people arrested as well. It wasn't just this woman. It was two Canadians, a Dutch man, and another Canadian man. I think these people weren't even traveling together. They just kind of all met at a hostel or something and went up the mountain.
I've done a bit of skinny dipping, but I haven't ever done anything, you know, with monuments, and that was long before the time of selfies. Or Snapchat. Hey, whose job is it to find out who these people were? Like, were these posted on Instagram or?
I assume that whatever they were shared, they probably were on someone's account.
I don't think it's all that hard.
Yeah.
It was on Facebook, I believe.
Yeah. So someone shared something or someone
look,
found something.
Here's me naked. Look, here's me in jail.
No sense.
Well, let's do one final story. You know, we complain a lot about airlines on this show for good reason, because they all suck. But we got one story here, which is kind of an airline doing a good thing. So in a recent Delta flight in Atlanta, they were, so what was the story? They were diverted in Atlanta, so they weren't going to Atlanta. They got stuck in Atlanta because of a storm. They were sitting on the runway, and the captain ordered pizza for everybody on the flight, which sounds pretty cool, but my question is, how did they get the pizza on the plane? What does the pizza delivery guy do? I mean, you can't get to the gate without a boarding pass. what were the logistics of that? I'm actually serious. How does this happen?
We still have to get through security, but somebody has to meet the pizza guy at security and, you know, walk through the x-ray machine with pizza boxes, probably a gate agent.
Yeah. And then the actual trucks that carry the bags out to the plane brought all the pizzas out there.
And did the pizzas go through an x-ray?
Right.
Gary, they were probably made by a pizza restaurant in the terminal.
That is a possibility as well.
Or a special TSA pizza inspector, or...
They have a picture of this, and these look like full size large pizza boxes, which you normally don't see at an airport. Right. Could be, but that's you don't usually see that size pizza at an airport. It's usually, and they only serve the small personal ones. But I don't know. So I guess kudos to Delta. Your frequent flyer program sucks, but good for you for buying pizzas for people.
Well, the money had to go someplace, Gary.
What kind? Was it Pizza Hut or Domino's or?
I was trying to look at the boxes. I couldn't quite tell. They looked like they weren't a Pizza Hut box. I don't know.
Nobody ever said, I don't think.
I don't know, but maybe they should work out some sort of marketing deal with Delta.
Right.
Like, you get stuck for 2 hours, it's Papa John's pizzas for everybody. Well, we got a brand new guest on the show, Mr. Scott Eddy. Well, why don't we just start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So, I was a stockbroker for 10 years, and I went on a trip to Bangkok that really changed my life. I fell in love with the country. I fell in love living overseas, and living overseas for about 5 years before social media even got popular and was invented, you know, Facebook, I had a chance to travel quite a bit and meet a lot of travel people, because there's a lot of travel people based in Bangkok. And I quickly realized that one day, the combination of I was gaining traction very quick in all my social media platforms, and the fact that 80% of my friends were either travel writers, travel bloggers, or travel something, I just went for it and spent the last 5 years building up my personal brand. And I consult with travel brands and startups in the travel industry, and I basically take them from a dinosaur mindset to a digital mindset. I teach them how to speak as a brand personality, how to develop a brand personality, how to talk on the digital platforms, how to hire the right digital people. It's been kind of fun.
And so what are you, now that you're done with your stockbroker days, I assume you're done, I don't know, what are you doing now? Are you still in Bangkok? I mean, I know you're not in Bangkok this moment.
Right. So 2015, I've been spending most of my time in San Francisco. I'm the new brand ambassador for a travel app that's coming out. It's going to be launched in the next month or so. And in between my various activities with that company, I work with tourism boards and different hotel brands on different consulting projects. And I'm traveling every week, and just got back from Dominican Republic, from Maui, from St. Augustine, Florida, from all over the place. I'm down here in Long Beach in LA for a few days. I'm back to San Francisco in a couple days. So travel schedule's full, and things are good. Keep them busy.
Tell us about your public speaking side of things. Does that intersect with your travel interests and your destinations that you're constantly going to?
Yes. So it's funny, because with the whole Greece situation right now, you guys familiar with the Travel Massive initiative?
Sure.
Okay. So Ian, the founder, is a really good friend of mine, and they're putting on their first travel conference in Greece, in Ios. It's supposed to be the later part of July. I'm supposed to be one of the keynotes for that, and you know, obviously with everything that's going on, it's going to be a very last minute thing, or it might be pushed a little bit. But yeah, I do speak at quite a few either startup events or travel events. I'm speaking at TBEX later this year in Bangkok, and you know, might be speaking at TBEX in Florida as well, just after that, I believe. So I speak quite a bit. It ties right in with my travel schedule.
But what's your topic? Like, is it motivational? Is it encouraging people to see the world and experience other cultures? Or is it on business topics?
So I speak a lot on how the digital age is affecting, you know, entrepreneurs, how it's affecting traveling, how it's changing traveling. They want to hear about my story, how I got here, because it's sort of a messed up story. It's all various things. I speak a lot about travel, though, a lot about the digital age and travel and social media and how it all intertwines.
Bless you, Chris.
Is that a question, Chris?
Question or comment?
I didn't get to my mute button there, sorry.
So what's been the biggest... So I started traveling full-time back in 2007. I'm just interested in what you have to say. What's the biggest change you've seen since you've kind of started traveling full-time?
So I moved overseas in 99, and when September 11th happened, I was actually in Bangkok, and I realized that gradually over the next 2 or 3 years, it just became a headache, especially in the U.S. Every time I came back here, it was just more stringent, more headaches in the airport, and you know, airports have become less fun and more just, oh, I got to go to the airport. I just, you know, your head just explodes. But I also see that airports are making strides to make things more comfortable for us. You know, like, I love Singapore Airport and Bangkok Airport. They're both great. But... Yeah, I mean, just the security is the main thing. And now if IATA approves this whole smaller baggage thing, I mean, you know, it sounds like little news, but I mean, it's going to give me a monster headache. there's just no way I could carry on bags anymore. I'd have to check in.
I took a flight just the other day on Sunday and Monday. It was the first time in several years where I did not check a bag. It was very weird for me to actually get on a plane without having to go to the baggage carousel when I was done. I've just become so used to it.
I almost never check a bag.
Yeah, but I usually live out of a bag. So
one of our trips to Europe or Africa or whatever this year, we checked a bag just because we didn't feel like schlepping it through the airport or whatever. But
the biggest change I've seen, I think, since I've started traveling has been smartphones.
Oh, yeah.
I began traveling in March 2007, which was the short period between when the iPhone was announced and when it went on sale. Wow. So there were no, I guess there were some really, real, you know, early Android devices that were available, but they weren't a big deal. The phone I had at the time was a Samsung A360 or something like that, but it was not a smartphone. It had a couple lines of LED text. And I realized, it was last month I was in Paris, and I had a flat tire. I was able to translate stuff, pull up maps, get things resolved, book a hotel, and just do all this stuff from this little square of metal and glass that was sitting in my pocket. And I'm thinking if this had happened to me, you know, 8 years earlier, what a pain it would have been to have to resolve all these things, to go find a phone and everything else. And it has really, it's almost like cheating. And I know people like, oh, you know, back in the day it was so wonderful. And everyone's, you know, the glory days of travel is always when they were traveling. It was never at a period of time before them. But I think this is, it has made, no one has an excuse not to travel anymore because it's so frickin' easy. Yeah. You can go where you want to go, you can book stuff, you can find stuff, you can get advice, you can get translations. It solves a language issue, it solves everything.
Yeah, correct.
That's my rant.
No truer statement has ever been said.
When you're traveling, are you often, you spend a lot of time in Bangkok. I've spent a lot of time in Bangkok. It's a great city. Are you pretty much just living wherever you happen to be, or are you actually like going, exploring, seeing stuff, doing things like that?
I explore.
Are you a serial expat, or are you like exploring, traveling, going to see the sights?
Half and half. I would say half and half. So last year I spent 7 months in Lisbon and 3 months in Sri Lanka. You know, I was just based in Lisbon and I went all over the country, all over, you know, experienced the vineyards and the castles and just everywhere. And in Sri Lanka, we literally went across the country and then we went down and then we went everywhere. So, I mean, it's half and half. When I'm in Thailand, I'm much more of an expat because I've already been everywhere. So it's like, it feels more home to me than it does living in the States. But yeah, half and half. I like that combination because there's sometimes that I want to travel. I just want to live in the city and just be like a local and do things and go out and go out to eat and just be like a normal person. And then there's sometimes when I just want to go where National Geographic would go.
Scott, what are your favorite neighborhoods in Thailand? What are the neighborhoods that you call home there?
For me, I like living in the city center of everything. So I live right on Sukhumvit, right in the middle of all the action. I lived, for the first 5 years, I lived where Emporium Shopping Mall is. I lived on top of Emporium on the 41st floor for the first 5.5 years. And
I used to stay right next to there on Soi 33.
Oh, yeah.
You know where the Londoner is?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I was like a block up from the Londoner. It was the Livingston's Lodge, but it closed down. The guy who owned it was a German who was a day trader.
Oh, wow.
He would sit by the pool all day smoking cigarettes on his computer trading stocks. And the reason I would stay there is because he was a day trader, he had a great internet. Yeah, and nobody else really took advantage of it. So, yeah, I would sit by the pool in the day too with my laptop and get work done.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, I'm a city guy, so I like the city.
So are you going back to Bangkok for TBEX, or are you just going to be in Bangkok while TBEX is taking place?
No. I'm going back for TBEX. I'm pretty much in the U.S. based for all of this year, and I just keep my now at this point, I'm not full time in Bangkok. I go where the work is, so I never plan for more than 3 or 4 months in advance. So I just don't know. I know my San Francisco stuff is going to be done around the same time as TBEX in Thailand. I don't know if I'm going somewhere else after Thailand, or, but I'll be there for at least a few weeks, if not the whole month of October.
And how do you normally travel? Are you staying in like luxury hotels or smaller places or renting an apartment?
When I'm in Thailand, I pretty much rent an apartment. When I normal travel, I'm normally 4 or 5 star. I can't do the hostel thing, and it drives me crazy.
You know, there is something in between the 4 and 5 star and the hostel.
Yeah, there is. There is. I don't do it. I don't know the scale. It just, you know, I have very good relationships, and I work with Four Seasons and St. Regis, and I like those brands.
Scott, when we were talking earlier, you were telling us a little bit about how you meet up with people and how you use your social streams to connect with other travelers when you get to a new place. Tell us a little bit about that and some of your favorite encounters that led to long-lasting friendships, not just friend in a city, but, you know, actually really good friends that lasted over the years.
So when I go to a new country, and I've done it 5 times, where I've only known one person there, I typically do a lot of research on the city that I'm going to find out who's the most engaging, who's the most active on generally Twitter, because that's where my conversations are. And I follow a lot of those people, and a lot of the people that they engage with, just a lot of the active community before I go, so that when I get there, because I know I'm always posting, I'm always doing videos and things like that, I immediately attract those engagements as soon as I get there. And every single time, it just leads to just direct relationships as soon as I land. So that as soon as I land in one of these cities, I can just tweet out who's in Lisbon, who's in Barcelona, who's in Marbella, and the stream just fills up. Relationships are absolutely instant. I mean, when I landed in Lisbon and I put my stuff in the hotel, I requested an Uber, as I always do, and my Uber driver said he's been following me on Instagram for a year and he couldn't believe that I was actually in his car. It was truly unbelievable. It blew me away. But it's happened more often than not. It's happened in Lisbon. It's happened in London. It's happened in Spain. I lived for 4 years. It's really, really cool. I mean, literally social media, but more importantly, Twitter, it's changed my life for the better. I love it.
What's your favorite social platform right now?
Twitter's number one, Instagram's number two. You know, I keep my Facebook updated, but I'm more active on my personal profile than my fan page because, you know, if you don't have a budget, you're just fighting the algorithm all the time. My Instagram is actually my fastest growing platform, but definitely my main platform is Twitter.
Excellent. Anything else before we move on to some picks?
Scott, where are you headed this for the rest of the year? Besides Thailand and possibly Florida, outside of TBEX, do you have any travels that are upcoming?
So whether or not this Travel Massive conference happens in Greece, I think a trip to Greece is inevitable sometime in the next few months because I am in talks with the tourism board over there. And I think Mexico and Chile at some point.
Business or pleasure or both?
No. Always business. My business and pleasure is the same thing for me. Because what I do, it doesn't feel like work. And I'm going back to Maui for the Food and Wine Festival, I think, the beginning of September. So that's cool.
All right, then. The only reason I'm rushing things along is because I know Scott has a very hard limit when he has to leave. So let's move on to our picks this season. Chris, do you have anything for us?
I I've gotten completely distracted. Let me find something. Start with Jen.
Okay.
All right, Jen, what do you got for us?
So I'm going to combine where you can find me online with my pick. So this week I had the cover story for Spud Hilton's San Francisco Chronicle travel section on the San Diego craft beer scene. And it got some good attention for San Diego. And so since that has come out, I found out about a package actually in Carlsbad that sort of does a customized luxe craft brew tour along the Hops Highway in San Diego. And so it is done by the West Inn and Suites in Carlsbad, and it's called the Hops Highway Retreat. So if any of you guys saw that article on San Diego and the craft beer scene and it made you want to run down here, consider staying in Carlsbad at an all-suite hotel that prides itself on really good customer service, and they are going to cruise you around in a luxe car to Stone Brewing Company, Lost Abbey, Mother Earth, and Ballast Point. And yeah, so get everything taken care of for you. Make it easy on yourself. West Inn & Suites in Carlsbad.
Chris?
Yeah,
was that so enough of a pause for you?
That was enough of a pause, okay. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, because we were doing the sharing economy theme earlier on, here's another one of those. If you do drive your car and you go someplace like San Francisco, which is notoriously difficult to park, or Boston, Los Angeles, there's about 10 cities, or 9 cities right now. There's a site called Luxe Valet, so LuxeValet.com, where it is a on-demand valet service that you can call and they come get your car. Theoretically, they also give it back to you, but you know, I've never used these guys. But I heard about them recently, and it's just an interesting, bizarre idea is they're not specifically associated with the property you're going to. They are a valet service for wherever you happen to be. And there are, you know, I could see that a service like this could be very useful in some of these urban environments where there's just really no, you know, you can spend a lot of money and a lot of time just trying to find a place to park if you brought your own car. Huh. So if you don't do Uber and you bring your own car, Lux Valet.
Does it say how much it is per day?
It.
No.
Jen wants to drive for them.
I believe it depends on the city. They're just getting started, so I'm not sure if I've seen a price yet.
All right. Well, the website, what is it, LuxeValet.com?
Yeah. Here it is. I'll look that up while you go on. Hourly rate of $5.
Huh, that's very good for San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Scott Eddy, do you have anything for us?
Are we doing picks of
anything? It could be a hint, a tip, a suggestion, a recommendation, anything
gear,
you like.
A
destination,
gear, website,
a book, an app, a gear.
You know, I'll say actually where I'm staying at. So I lived in L.A. for a year back in 97. I'm obviously, you know, Southern California is a different beast now. But I have never been to this area before, and I'm staying in Long Beach. You know, I was in Huntington Beach yesterday for the sunset, and just this whole area. I'm so blown away, impressed by this place, and I'm actually staying at the Long Beach Marriott, which is right next door to the Long Beach Airport. And it is the nicest airport hotel that I've ever seen in my life. I feel like I'm at a resort. It's really, really cool. So, this is my pick: Long Beach Marriott.
Very good.
That one's a little boring, Scott. We're going to have to ask that you give us a second. Because there's no way you're staying at an airport hotel and there's a resort feel. Like, is there a pool? Is there a swim-up bar?
There is an outdoor pool. There's an indoor pool. There's a huge fitness. I mean, it's really, really cool. It's really shocking, but it's cool.
Did they comp your stay?
They comp the first half. They're not comping right now because I'm technically finished working.
All right.
That is a non-promoted...
Practically unacceptable.
Okay. Jen, you're not one to talk. You've had some pretty bad things.
I believe you had one that was show. I believe you had one that was patriotism or motherhood. I don't remember which one it was. But...
Okay, I got two picks. The first of which is I finally, after years of traveling, I have had the crappiest backup system for my photos. It's not been good. I just could keep buying external hard drives and making copies, more and more hard drives. And I knew what I should do. I should get a RAID type array, and I finally buckled down, and I bought a Drobo. And so that's my first pick. A Drobo, it's a RAID array, means a redundant array of inexpensive disks. You put four hard drives in, and if one or two of the hard drives goes bad, you just pop in another drive, and you don't lose anything. So it's very redundant, and it offers a lot of solution. I got four 3-terabyte drives, so I got space up the wazoo. It's more secure than it was before, so I'm pretty happy. If you take a lot of photos...
There's my Drobo.
Yeah, and I'm sure you keep a lot of your podcast episodes and things on it, so it's...
Oh, yeah.
I really just kind of put my mind at ease, finally having done this.
Yeah, well, I still don't have a good off-site solution for my backups.
I don't, you know, well, that gets into a whole other thing. I think that it's still very difficult to do because of bandwidth if you're trying to upload, you know, terabytes of stuff.
Wait, Gary, right. Didn't you used to use something like SmugMug or something?
Well, I still do, but it's not a service for archiving raw files, really.
Right.
It's a photo hosting service, so once my edited photos are up, I use SmugMug.
Right.
That I use. I love SmugMug. Big fan of SmugMug, but it's not the same thing as what I'm using.
The one thing that I do use for backup, but I'm not getting as much utility of it, right next to the Drobo is sitting a transporter, which is the shiny blue disk. I don't know if you can see it. And that allows you to make your own cloud. You could have one here and one in Gary's basement, for instance, and then have the two sync so that everything that I put on the disk that's attached to the transporter gets copied to somebody else's transporter elsewhere in the internet. But I'm not making enough use of it right now to really do that. I really should get one of these and put it in my son's apartment or something like that as well.
So let me tell you my second pick. So on December 12th of this year, I'm going to be visiting Wake Island. Wake Island is a U.S. territory in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and tourists haven't visited Wake Island in 10 years. And if you want to take part, it's commemorating the Battle of Wake Island. It is being run, it's a charter flight being run through Military History Tours. Go to miltours.com. They offer two different versions. One is just the day trip to the island itself, and another is a more extended one with things on Guam. This is one of the most difficult territories in the world to visit, and the reason I'm going is friend of the show, Lee Abamonte, notified me of it, and it's one of these places that when the opportunity arises, kind of jump at it, and so that's what I'm doing. Milltours.com.
Hey, Gary, don't forget to also mention that your website got a makeover.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. If you go to everything-everywhere.com, brand spanking new, first time I've changed my website in 6 years. No more of the black background, heavy metal / porn site feel. it's responsive, much bigger images. I've now can display 1200 pixel wide images instead of 1000 pixel wide images, 40% boost in resolution, which is great. And, I'm really liking it. And,
very nice feel. Congrats.
Oh, and then I should also, well, I'll talk about it when we start to go off, but there's a new place you can find me online.
Oh, it's...
But first, let's start to wrap things up. Mr. Scott Eddie has to go. Chris, what's new in the Amateur Traveler this week?
I just did a show on Atlanta, Georgia. Have a guest on who's talked about all sorts of wonderful obscure places around the world like Vanuatu and Tonga, and came back to talk about his hometown of Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, now I demand to do an Appleton, Wisconsin episode of The Amateur Traveler.
We'll talk.
Jen, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Jen Leo. I'm heading down to Social Media Day San Diego tonight, where I will be meeting my meerkat friends at Vincenzo Landino and more people. You can find me on the LA Times travel site for my WebBuzz column. And as of last week, on the San Francisco Chronicle's website, sfgate.com/travel for the SD Beer craft beer article.
Oh, one thing I forgot. In 2 days, Amateur Traveler turns 10 years old.
Wow. Happy birthday.
Chris, that's fantastic.
That's pretty close to death in internet years. That's like 70, I think.
I believe it is.
Mrs. Scott Eddy, where can people find you online?
Mr. Scott Eddy, everything. MrScottEddy.com, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything. I'll just say one more thing. Being in this area is super cool because I had my biggest Instagram post ever yesterday. I took the sunset photo of Huntington Beach from the pier, and literally it just absolutely exploded on my Instagram. It was very, very cool. I'm sure all three of you guys have been there, but I mean, it was super, super cool.
I have not been there. Guilty. Wow.
It's a special
you're
place.
You're kidding. That's like you're the one who's actually closest to there.
Right. Right.
People love sunset photos. Oh, sunsets, yeah. Mountains, rainbows, and unicorns.
You can get them all in one photo.
That's a winner. You can find me at all the usual spots, and you can now find me on iTunes. Search for The Global Travel Conspiracy, my new podcast with the CBS Play It Network. Episode 1 just launched last week. My guest was Robert Reed, digital nomad for National Geographic, and former editor of Lonely Planet and former guest of this show. We have an interesting discussion that just kind of talks about all sorts of things, including Chester Arthur's pants, his blue clarinet experiment on the island of St. Lucia, and the show is basically one giant rat hole. So I get a guest, and we just take the conversation wherever it goes.
And well, so Gary, now, Gary, you have two different shows that you cannot get out on a regular basis. Is that what the plan is?
Oh, no, this one, I don't have to worry about you guys. I can just do it myself. In fact, half the shows won't even have a guest. So I don't even, if the shows don't come out, it's definitely my fault. But anything, any last words before we adjourn?
Chris, is this post going to go up by tomorrow morning?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, well, Scott is going to come down to San Diego. Is that confirmed, Scott?
100%. Leave it in the morning.
And we are going to be doing a crowdsourced meetup. So we are going to be turning to our Twitter following and so forth for people to suggest where Scott and I should go meet up and have our chats and take a few pics and brainstorm life and collaboration.
For sure.
And until next time, if you happen to be in Carlsbad, California and are in need of a car, get on Lyft.
Request Jen.
And look at Jen Leo.
I can even give you a $20 coupon off your first ride. Hit me up on Twitter.